interrupt this broadcast and bring you this important bulletin from the United Press. Flash, Washington. The White House announces Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor.
Today is the 67th anniversary of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, the day of infamy that brought the United States into World War II. The war ended nearly 4 years later with Japan's surrender after the August 1945 bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But for an army of Japanese soldiers, another struggle had just begun. Independent producer Robert Rand recently met one of those soldiers at a coffee shop in Tokyo.
The Renoir Cafe in Tokyo's West End is a hangout for the gray-haired generation. On this day, the place is packed, and at a cramped table sits Kyuzo Kato, an 86-year-old scholar, one of Japan's leading archaeologists. Kato is rumpled, weather-beaten, and soft-spoken. Because of what he has been through, because of what happened to him after World War II, he is cautious and would only be interviewed in this very public and noisy place. Caution is a fellow traveler with Kyuzo Kato. It's the byproduct of having survived Joseph Stalin's gulag. This is the march of Stalin's artillery. In August 1945, Stalin's big guns rolled into Japanese-occupied Chinese Manchuria. The invasion took place days after the atomic bombing of Hiroshima and days before Japan surrendered. Kyuzo Kato was 23 years old at the time, a foot soldier with Japan's Manchurian occupation force. The Russian invaders overwhelmed the Japanese and took nearly 600,000 Japanese soldiers prisoner, including Kato. Most of the prisoners were held in Siberian labor camps for 2 to 5 years, some even longer.
So it was an army of slaves. It was a giant workforce that Stalin used to build railways and harvest timber.
David Janes is a Japan expert with the United States Japan Foundation. He says the Cold War explains why Stalin was able to hold on to the POWs for so long. From the Soviet perspective, he says, the trouble began in August 1945, when General Douglas MacArthur took command of the occupation of Japan.
So you have the U.S. and Japan on one side, and you have the Soviet Union really on the other. And as these tensions increased, these internees were really part of the politics of the time, and it became difficult for them to be returned to Japan by the Soviet Union.
4 years and 8 months. That's how long, Kyuzo Kato says, he was a POW in Siberia. There he endured relentless, skin-freezing cold, inadequate housing, scant food and clothing. The worst moment, Kato says, was when three of his comrades escaped into the Siberian winter. Two of them were caught while eating the flesh of the third. When I heard of this, Kato says, I wanted to stop being a human being.
America's number one soldier, General Douglas MacArthur, celebrates his 70th birthday in Tokyo. The city's schoolchildren surprise him with a special greeting in English.
By the time this newsreel broadcast MacArthur's birthday festivities in January 1950, Kyuzo Kato and many of his compatriots were on their way home to Japan. They would travel from Russia by sea and dock at the port city of Maizuru, their Ellis Island. This newsreel focuses on one of the many ships as it arrived.
Aboard are 3,000 Japanese prisoners of war released from Siberia. Among them are 500 hospital cases. Only a few weeks ago, when America charged Russia with still holding 500,000 Japs, the Kremlin dismissed the United States protest as lying capitalist propaganda.
The Reds claimed Kato returned to Japan in good physical health. He had learned Russian in the camps, my forced educational exchange program, he jokes, and had developed an affection for Siberia, despite the trauma he experienced there. Determined to make something positive of his years in captivity, Kato became an archaeologist. Siberia would be his area of expertise. He also studied ancient cultural sites in Uzbekistan, where the Soviets had held some 23,000 Japanese POWs. For Kyuzo Kato, digging up the ancient past diminishes his unpleasant wartime memories. Towards the end of our conversation in Tokyo's Renoir Cafe, Kyuzo Kato reached inside a paper bag and pulled out a book. It's an account of his latest dig, this one in Uzbekistan. Kato finds the page he's looking for and, without warning, unabashedly sings. Cafe patrons turn their heads. Kato sings of a river that flows into the Uzbek desert, past very old relics, and on the riverbank, a sad wildflower blooms. Kato wrote these words. Considering his harsh experience as a POW, it would be easy to think that the sad wildflower symbolizes Kato. It doesn't. Kato is an optimist. He likes his sake and enjoys a good time. As for his years of internment, Kato plays them down. If it was so bad, he says, then I would not have survived. For NPR News in Tokyo, this is Robert Rand.
You're listening to Weekend Edition from NPR News.